So tell me, where exactly does that motivation come from? I mean, you know you're supposed to be motivated. You're not supposed to get motivation. But how does it actually work? Well, stay tuned. I've got a great show coming up for you today.
Welcome to Hypno Running, the show where we do more than just talk about running. We help you find solutions to develop your full potential, making you a better, faster, and smarter runner. And here is your host, Heiko.
Yes, exactly. Today's show, all about how to get that motivation going. And look, this is a show where we use practical advice. This is where we dig right into the heart of the matter. And motivating yourself is one of the most important factors for you to remain a runner and to become a better, a stronger, and of course also a smarter runner. And one of the ways how you actually motivate yourself is using positive stories. Positive stories, exactly. You've got stories running through your head. You've got reasons. You've got excuses. You remember old failures. That's so easy, isn't it? Just remembering that last time you set out for a personal best and you didn't do it, or you that's the last time you took part in a race with your club and you knew you were on track to run a faster race than that one person in your club, but eventually you didn't manage that time. And you remember that time you said something really stupid, really, really silly. How could those words have come out of your mouth? Actually, you're ashamed of it thinking about it right now. So how about replacing those thoughts, those stories, with positive ones? Positive ones that emphasize your strengths, your values, and your accomplishments. Simple. We never think of them. You know, we much rather think about those failures that we have and perhaps have that guilty Damocles sword hanging over us. But the ones with our values, our strengths, our accomplishments, those type of stories, they do help cultivate what? Confidence in yourself, optimism to look forward with really great expectations, and resilience. And also it helps you to manage that stress. It helps you to manage past disappointments and failures. So using positive run stories, you're going to recall a time where you really succeeded, or you overcame a challenge, and how it made you feel and how you learned about it. And you can also imagine that'll give you the strength to imagine a future run scenario where you achieve a much more special outcome than you currently can even envision. So let's look for example of runners who've achieved similar goals or they faced similar challenges and considered how did they do it. And that's how you use stories to create meaning. Another way, of course, is to motivate yourself with stories is to listen to stories that create meaning and purpose for your actually daily actions concerning your run. So that means you need to connect your goals to your values. You need to connect your goals to your passion and to your vision. No sense in having that marathon as a goal, but it's really actually not, you're not so passionate about it. You just want it for the medal. That might not be the right reason that's going to help you go through a 12, 16, or even longer training plan. So you also need to understand the impact and, of course, the benefit of your actions. So to do this, you need those core values and beliefs that drive your goals and how they relate to your personality, your personal mission statement, and why your goal matters to you. What will that self with your own story or with stories of others is something that also helps you set really ambitious goals. Why? Because you'll be able to overcome those limiting beliefs that you have. That's what actually happens when you tell a story. Stories help you explore new perspectives. It helps you gain new opportunities and also see possibilities where maybe up until now you've just been stuck. So to use stories and to challenge yourself, you should set the SMART goals and track progress. I'll explain that just now. It's important to identify and question that negativity, that self-defeating story, and replace it with a new, with a positive one. So seeking that constructive feedback from yourself. And a final way to really get that down is by using a pen and paper. And then you use them to influence, to persuade your own argumentation, the situation at hand, the task that you need to do, the action that you need to take, and the result that you hope to get out of it. And If you have you need character involved in that story. You need a bit of a conflict, and you need a conclusion. Make that story great. These are all storytelling tips. These are all copywriting advice I'm giving you here. Or you have the four P's, the purpose behind your story, which leads to the passion, which gives the plot and the punchline. And I've got a couple of examples coming up where you're going to hear about that. By using these storytelling techniques, writing it out for yourself, you're going to see how that's really going to take you to the next level. What, Heiko? You're making me listen to a show where I need to do something afterwards? Rather give me a show with a four-minute ad where I can listen to a product that I just need to buy and drink. No, not even drink it, just buy it and keep it on your shelf at home in the kitchen, and already you're going to get better. Sorry, it's not that kind of show. What we're offering here is real advice that you can use right now to help you become a better, a stronger runner. For me, the story is a very simple one. Roger Bannister, that's how one person actually changed a lot in the world. And this story of Roger Bannister is one of my favorites because it has a universal message, which is all about breaking adversity and envisioning a new person, a new possibility. And it's a great one to share because there were so many naysayers and so many times that the word impossible fell. So up until 1954, it was actually widespread thought that it's impossible that anybody would ever be able to run a mile quicker than 4 minutes. Sort of like now, the sub-two-hour marathon, which has been broken. And now some of you are going to say, well, it was broken under conditions that weren't raised. So what? Nobody helped him run those 1 hour and 59 minutes. There were other people there. Yes, there were paces. There was a car marking the pace, but he still had to take each and every step. So actually, in my world, the sub-two-hour marathon has already happened. Anyway, back to Roger Bannister in 1954. There were doctors, psychologists, expert runners that said the human body would not be able to perform at that level. It's physically impossible. And many of them actually also criticized him for trying. And, of course, he proved everybody wrong. Roger Bannister was the first person to break the four-minute mile. His time was 3:59.4. And the real story behind the story, which we can learn from, is that since then, thousands more have been able to break that four-minute mile because one person showed them that it's possible. That's the biggest inspiration out of it. So Roger Bannister showed others that breaking that four-minute mile was not only possible, but that it was a mindset. And through dedicated training and that personal motivation, he changed that outlook and he inspired others to do it. You know, Bannister was a leader of his influence upon others. He was influencing them. And it's the difference between a transactional manager and a transformative leader. You know, transactional managers, they might get things done. They get things done. But they don't inspire anyone else along or to join them. But a transformational leader, he empowers others and to constantly improve. And if you yourself can decide, are you a transactional runner who gets the things done, or are you a transformational runner for yourself? If you are a transactional runner, you know, it's like you'll get the things done and you'll go and do the training plan as you should be. But if you are a transformational runner, you're going to try new things. You're going to set yourself very aspiring goals. You're going to set yourself up for every time you show up at the track, you're going to give your best that you currently can give. And if you look at Bannister, he wasn't born with any silver spoon in his mouth. You know, he was a working class family. They struggled to make ends meet. And all he had was a passion for running. And he trained very hard, very intensely. And there were many times he wanted to quit. But he didn't settle. He kept on focusing on his goal. And he was passionate enough and he envisioned it. And there's so much about how he envisioned the race, how he thought about the race. Actually, every evening before falling asleep, he would picture himself, visualize himself. He used so many mental techniques, but we never talk about them, do we? Let's just Google Roger Bannister. It's all about how he did it through training. No, actually, he did so much mental work and he used very little time that he had available, because he was a medical student, to actually run, but he managed to do the most out of it. And he might just be the best example of using mental techniques to become a better runner. So Bannister, he mentioned repetition is the mother of the skill. And what he did is he had that belief that it can be done. He didn't focus on reasons why it can't be done, but why it should be done. And this brings us to the power of belief. You know, the human psychology behind this is fascinating. Once one person proved that it was possible, others also believed that they can do it. And then suddenly it became reality. And if we start defining what a belief actually is, there are thousands of definitions. And the one that I always use is that by Tony Robbins. You know, he says that a belief is really just a meaning of certainty about something, a meaning of certainty about something. So whether that something is for, you know, relationship, for society, it's a definition. And the point is that beliefs we hold that shape our lives because they act as switches that can be turned on or off. And most people's belief about the possibility of doing a sub-4-minute mile were turned off, except for Roger Bannister. So many times I realize when I have a workshop and I work with people that suddenly they quote something that they've been told by their parents, perhaps. And sometimes I've even heard words like, well, never expect too much out of life, you know, and everybody laughs. And if I question that person about it, well, that's how you grow up without being disappointed. And looking back, you know, maybe those parents had positive intentions. They wanted to protect from disappointment. But the negative impact was that, you know, you really grow up to be a runner that stretches himself or herself in other areas of life to be the best that you can be. Many of us were told as kids, you know, you're not a natural or your legs are not made for running. And this comment, unfortunately, it sticks. And you might still hear it today in that corner of your brain as you're struggling up a hill. It might be 20, 30 or 40 years back, but you're still remembering it. Again, I didn't try to be funny or belittle the situation. It's the second day of the workshop. We go out for a long run. And a runner will come up to me and sort of like discreetly, by the way, I'm going to take it a bit slower because I'm just one of the slow runner group over here. And I'm like, hang on, stop right there. Who said that? And again, a PT teacher once said, you are a slow runner. So we believe that just because somebody once told it. And that teacher's comment created a belief that stayed so long and created this mental environment. So holding on to that belief had such a huge impact on this runner. And that's, of course, I told you that at Advanced Endurance Coaching, we work with really powerful methods where we just have a private session and we do some work. And usually within the next 20 minutes, that belief is so far gone. You know, belief is just a, you can imagine like a tabletop. It's supported by legs or references. And there are many people out there that think, oh my goodness, this world is just such a bad place. And then they find somebody else who says, oh yeah, absolutely. And next thing, you're talking about coronavirus, and then you're talking about the oil, and you're talking about the environment and the oceans and the muggings and. Rather than, you know, realizing it's a confirmation bias and understanding that we don't believe what we see what we believe. Because wait a moment, I don't know about you, but I had a fantastic run this morning. I saw flowers. I saw a couple of rays of sun coming through the coming through the clouds. I saw people greet each other. I even saw dogs crossing their path without barking. I mean, that's like idyllic. I ran past the soup kitchen here in my little town. It's not a soup kitchen where they serve hot meals, but it's for people who have maybe some setbacks where they can get support, food, and basic essentials. That's what I saw. So which one is true? You know, the beliefs, meaning of certainty that we have about something, some of them are not true. And if my belief is true, how does this impact my behavior? So if I believe I'm a slow runner, I believe the world is bad, I'm just going to see bad things. If I believe I'm a slow runner, I'm going to join the slow running group, which nobody even said there is a slow running group. And it's the same like, you know, saying you're hopeless at DIY just because you don't like it. And actually, DIY is such a simple thing. If you look at an IKEA bookshelf, it's a DIY thing. And nobody's going to tell me that IKEA is not successful. It's one of the most successful companies because all around the world, people who are not good at DIY could suddenly start changing their houses. So again, where does your belief come from? And perhaps you have to overlook that, the fact that many times you're focused on the wrong things. So your belief can fall into one or two main categories, you know, the empowering belief that serves you or the limiting belief that's holding you back. Now to your 4-minute mile, let me ask you, what is your 4-minute mile? What do you believe is possible for you? I'm just a slow runner. No, what's possible for you to accomplish if you would make it a reality, if you challenge your belief and you just go for it? That's a difficult answer. Well, it's a difficult question to answer. Because you'd prefer to hold on. Well, I've been trying my best 5K for years now and I've never come below 22 minutes. That's a belief. You are deciding it. You know, have a look at there's a video of Roger Bannister where you can see him, and it's been like updated, it's been corrected. I'll put the link in it. You know, that's when somebody doubts you or you doubt yourself. That's when you need to have that inspirational story. That's when you need to have a clear focus of it. Look at it. Spend some time finding these stories. Watch some YouTube stories about really people who thought something and then there was a paradigm shift in their thoughts and suddenly, and then you go out and make your own story. And if you look for some fantastic stories, you know, I like stories where the unlikeliest hero, where he wins. And actually, if you read the Bible, so does God. You know, it's like when an unranked college team upsets a ranked team and then they storm the court, you know, after the upset. And Gideon is a perfect example of the underdog. And when the angel of the Lord came to Gideon and said, "The Lord is with you, O mighty man of valor." Wow, powerful stuff. So be a runner of valor. Thanks for listening to today's show. If you feel there's someone who needs to hear this, please share it. My name is Heiko. Thank you for your time. God bless you. And remember, take it easy.